Everything is changing. Your team needs cutting-edge tactics and insights. Join us this Friday, June 2nd at 11:30 a.m. Eastern, that's 8:30 Pacific, for our live virtual summit, Attention, Streaming and the New Digital Ad Economy. You'll walk away with tactics to level up your understanding of hot growth areas like retail media and connected TV. We'll also arm you with insights to navigate search and social advertising amid privacy, ChatGPT and Gen Z shockwaves. Visit insiderintelligence.com/events to register.
The part of the reason why is that they've actually been caught somewhat surprised at the very beginning that they're making more on a per user basis for these ad supported subscribers.
Hey gang, it's Thursday, June 1st. Jeremy and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast. I feel low energy. Thank God. People listening are like, thank God, Marcus, you are insufferable the way you normally sound. I don't know why, but this is the speed we're going to do today's episode. I'm Marcus, a lower energy Marcus. Today I'm joined by our Senior Director of Briefings based out of New York. It's Jeremy Goldman.
Good morning, and I'll bring the extra energy to make up for your lackadaisical attitude.
Turn it down. today's facts. I feel like you're the Jalen Brunson to my, what's his name?
Julius Randle?
Julius Randle, yeah. Yeah. Julius Randle always looks like he doesn't want to be there.
He's misunderstood, I think.
Aren't we all? Today's fact. Jeremy, there's only one, well, it could be a question too. There's only one city in America where all its major sports teams in the city share the same color palette.
I'm not gonna get this. This is hard.
It is hard, yeah.
Oh my god, this is. Am I gonna feel stupid?
No.
Okay.
Maybe.
I was gonna say Detroit. Is it Detroit?
Oh no, Pittsburgh.
Ah. Yes, I should have gotten that.
But Pittsburgh is the answer. Pittsburgh, the Steelers, football, Pirates, baseball, and Penguins hockey all share the same color uniforms. Of course, black and gold. It's a shame none of their teams are good. Just kidding, Pittsburgh. Anyway, today's real topic, Netflix and new service Max with ads. In today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover Netflix and Max's ad tiers. Then, for another news, we'll discuss where esports is at and the best CTV ad formats so far. But for the lead, Jeremy, we're talking about Netflix first, and then we'll talk about Max after. So Netflix, Jess Weatherbetter, The Verge, points out that almost 5 million people globally, 5 million people around the world, are using Netflix's ad tier that launched about 6 months ago. But we have to be clear, Netflix are touting 5 million monthly active users, MAUs, not subscribers. Monthly active user is someone who is using it, watching it in the month. Subscriber is someone who pays for it. So you could have one subscriber and multiple viewers. The streaming giant did say that the number of ad-supported subscribers had more than doubled since early this year. So that number is also going up. Jeremy, what should we make of this 5 million MAU number for Netflix's ad tier?
Yeah, I mean, clearly it's showing some progress in that regard, which is very important to note. I think that the more interesting thing, or equally interesting thing, is all of the progress that they've made in terms of their ad innovations and what they're able to offer advertisers, because it's not just about how many do you have, it's more so about how can you open up more and more inventory to serve ads to these subscribers. And, at the recent upfronts, there were some really interesting presentations showing that essentially that Netflix has made a commitment to catching up as essentially an advertising company, as an ad platform. You know, before it was more like about a year ago, oh, wait, we have to start serving ads. How do we do that quickly? without really much of a plan in place, you know, and now they have obviously a little bit of an install base. They have a lot of things that show optimism that that 5 million MAU number is not just, you know, something that they're going to plateau early, but that they're going to really build on this early success and going to continue innovating to drive that number upwards.
Yeah, speaking of innovating, so it's Antir is developing, as you pointed out, a few ways. One, quality, better picture quality now being offered for that ad tier, and also allowing up to two devices to use an account simultaneously. Two, the content. They're adding new content and getting closer to having the same content on both its ad-free and ad-supported offerings. And then three, advertising-wise, advertisers in the US soon have more choice in where and when their ads run. So, for example, they could be offered in the top 10 most watched shows or films during holidays, starts of episodes. And also, Jeremy, I think you were noting that by the end of the year, Netflix will provide Nielsen's digital ad ratings measurement.
Yeah, product. I think that that's right. That's one thing that, you know, in addition to actually having the ad innovation, you know, of course, if you're an advertiser, then you want at the very least parity with what you're getting elsewhere in terms of who you're reaching. You want to make sure that you don't have one random person in Pittsburgh who is getting served the same ad, you know, 500 times. You want to make sure that you're actually hitting people at the right cadence and just basically having better information about how your ads are performing. So yep, that's another thing that they're performing really well at. And I think another thing you might even mention, and if I'm, you know, preempting you, apologies, but the part of the reason why is that they've actually been caught somewhat surprised at the very beginning that they're making more on a per user basis for these ad supported subscribers, you know, which basically is like, that's why they're doing all these things about making the ad tier better than it was at launch, because they realized, hey, you know, let's not worry about the fact that like, let's give them multiple streams, right? Because if we give them that and we get more subscribers, then our overall revenue per user as an entire company is going to go up.
Yeah, yeah, they're going to be definitely trying to push more and more of its users to its ad tier, because as you mentioned, its average revenue per user that it makes from its ad tier is higher than the $15.50 for its standard plan. Although similar to Disney Plus, only a fraction of its users are ad tier people. It's got a lot of room there to make some of those regular users who pay for no ads to move them over to the ad tier, where, as Jeremy pointed out, is making more money per user. So similar share in terms of just a fraction of its users being ad tier people for Netflix and for Disney. About 20% of HBO Max subscribers, the service, which was before Max, we'll talk about Max in a second, about 20% of those people were ad-tier folks. Half of Paramount Plus and Discovery Plus folks are ad-tier people, and most of Hulu and Peacock's users are ad-tier people. So just varying degrees of or shares of ad-tier people, depending on which service you're looking at. They've got a long way, though, Jeremy. If you look at the total number of folks, they've got a long way to go to catch rivals. As of March, Disney-controlled Hulu had 20 million US ad-tier subscribers. Peacock had over 15, Disney Plus nearly 11, HBO Max nearly 4 million ad-tier people, according to Antenna. So Netflix trying to catch up with those folks. But it's got a growing share of new signups who are opting for the ad-tier. Netflix's co-CEO Greg Peters recently said that over 25% of new signups select the ad-supported tier.
Yeah, no, and it's one of those things where why do they not have more people in the ad-supported tier? It's just simply because it's newer. You know, you are going to get more people who are going to opt in. And there are people who just have the inertia of they've had a Netflix subscription for a long time. So as a result, they're just not going to, you know, make that movement towards another tier, you know, towards the ad tier, even if they don't use it that much and they would benefit from such a move. There are a lot of people who just don't make a move. You know, what we've seen from consumers is that It's a little, you introduce a slight bit of friction, such as like, just click this button and you're going to be saving a few dollars per month. And there are a lot of people who won't actually do it just because people are busy.
Yeah. Something might force their hand. Suzanne Vranitzer and Sarah Krauss of the Wall Street Journal suggesting the ad tier could get a boost in the coming weeks as Netflix extends its password sharing crackdown in the US and other countries. And so what's going on there is if you have a subscription to Netflix, you're paying $15.50 for the standard plan. You can share within your household, within your physical location, within that building. But if you want to have someone outside of your household use your account, you have to pay $8 per person. And different accounts allow you to add multiple people. But you still have to pay $8 per additional person outside of your house who is sharing your password. And so, yeah, Jeremy, a lot of people might say, I'm not going to do that. I'll just drop down to the ad-supported tier.
And a very interesting fun fact is that 2/3 of Netflix password sharers say that they'll pay for their own accounts. It's something that we covered for subscribers recently from research from Samba TV and Harris X.
Interesting.
There's a very interesting and you know, subscribers go check out that article. One of the things that also struck me is that, 37% also of current Netflix subscribers said that they would actually cancel their accounts that they couldn't share their password. But as we know from past research, there's a major difference between what people say they're going to do and what they're actually going
to
do.
Absolutely. And we've got two kind of case studies here to suggest that what Ms. Vranitza and Ms. Krauss of the Wall Street Journal are suggesting could play out, because in Canada and Spain, where this password crackdown has already, or sharing scheme has already been rolled out, they have noticed people who are not password sharing anymore move over to the ad-supported tier. So they're assuming that's also going to be the case in the US. One final thing here, Jeremy, is interesting. Ad-supported viewers, not necessarily more passive viewers either, which is promising for, which is a good sign for Netflix. Viewer engagement on ad-supported tiers mirrors the engagement level seen across the ad-free Netflix accounts as well. Let's talk about a new service, Jeremy. This came out May 23rd. You've written a little bit about this as of late. And Warner Brothers Discovery has merged HBO Max and Discovery Plus, which it owns, both of those two, into a new service called Max. Flavor 1 is $10 a month with ads. Flavor 2 is $16 a month, no ads. Or Flavor 3 is $20 a month for the ultimate, which has more features. Current HBO Max subscribers should have been moved over automatically to the new Max service. Discovery Plus people got to choose. Jeremy, what to you are the two biggest impacts that you expect this new combined service, now called Max, to make?
So in some ways, this is interesting because obviously this is the fruit of Warner Brothers and Discovery coming together. Took about a year to happen. There are probably questions about they could have made this happen a little bit sooner. There were some issues with the rebrand, including people who had their apps not automatically update. A few hiccups there that are probably not going to be memorable in the long run. I think that probably one of the biggest impacts is the question of, they essentially have this thesis, which is that you have this content that's going to help you not churn. And that's essentially the Discovery Plus content. And then you have the stuff that gets you to sign up in the first place, and that's the HBO content. Mm-hmm. So the question is, are you able to get people to sign up because of HBO content and then stick around forever because of reality TV that is Discovery's bread and butter? Mm-hmm. And what we've seen in the past is that the demographics are actually pretty different from the typical HBO Max subscriber and the typical Discovery Plus subscriber. So essentially, there's a bit of a thesis here, which is that forget about the fact that they had different demographics. You might sign up for some content and then you are going to stick around for this other stuff. But that's a very big if, So ultimately, it's the kind of thing that the company had to do. And I think there's been early positive feedback on the user experience, which has gotten a little bit better.
Yeah.
HBO Max had been dinged in a number of different occasions for it was just a little bit hard to find things in its interface. So, so it's overall positive, but with some caveats.
Yeah. Yeah, the it feels like HBO Max, to a certain extent, on purpose. And they said that they, Warner Brothers Discovery, largely rebuilt Max, focusing on cleaner navigation, personalization, reliable offline downloads as well. So they're focused on making it a cleaner navigation experience, but also making it feel familiar to those former HBO Max subscribers. Warner Brothers Discovery, the streaming business, turned a profit for the first time in Q1, $50 million. They said they cut back on content spending, so that helped a lot. But what do you expect, Jeremy, this to do to viewership for Max? So we forecast that HBO Max, there are going to be 90 million viewers this year, which if they moved all those folks over to Max, then Max would have that many at least. Similar to Peacock and Paramount Plus, they each have about 90 million. Netflix has double that. What does this new combined service do to viewership, do you think? Does it think it gives it a bit of a tailwind or not so much?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, first off, we had a HBO Max forecast on our site available to subscribers that basically shows, you know, here's what we thought what was going to happen to Max once it was announced. And, you know, we were assuming that this breadth of content would be overall a net positive, for them. Obviously, there are a whole number of other factors that are coming into play, which is, you know, does Disney Plus and Hulu essentially get bundled together a little bit more, which is essentially going to happen.
Right. They're talking about the one app experience they're going to launch this year, right?
Yeah. So the plans are to have that happen later this year. And so essentially, the streaming is moving so incredibly fast that it's hard to look at it in a vacuum. But ultimately, this should be a net positive for their ability to reduce churn, which is especially in, you know, highly inflationary times. There's a lot of data that we've seen that people are going to say, like, okay, listen, I have like 5-6 streaming subscriptions. I love streaming, so I'm going to keep most of them. But what should I cut? You know? And you just don't want to be the platform that people answer, you know, like say your name when it's time to figure out like you want to save $10 or $15 a month. And, so Max is essentially trying to future-proof themselves a little bit in that regard and say that hope that people are going to cut like their Peacock or their Paramount Plus or whatever.
Well, speaking of Paramount Plus and also combined services, there's a newly combined Paramount Plus and Showtime service which got announced. That's going to launch in the US June 27th. So Paramount Plus and Showtime combined. The monthly ad-supported plan goes from $5 to $6. The premium plan will go from $10 to $12. Your thoughts on this tie-up?
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that really what they're trying to do with this promotion is just get the numbers up high so that they have something great to talk about in the next quarter. And really focus a little bit more on, in some ways, it's almost the opposite story of Max, which is, you know, really focused on cutting costs and getting those under control and heading towards profitability. I think that Paramount Plus kind of sees itself as the, you know, in that example that I gave about the service that people might find most cuttable, Paramount Plus is in danger of being that type of service for some people. And, you know, the bundle with Showtime is smart. I think the branding is a bit awkward, you know, Paramount Plus plus Showtime, you know. So, you know, it might actually behoove them to try to figure out how do you get Showtime in there and to almost brand that as a more cohesive thing as opposed to a, you know, really awkward long bundle name. But ultimately, like, they are playing the user acquisition game more than Max is right now.
That's it for The Lead. Time now for the halftime report. Jeremy, if you could give me one thing that you think is worth repeating from the first half of the show.
I think we said the word consolidation, maybe. And we're going to see a lot more consolidation within this space. Even Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav said recently that we're going to expect to see more bundling behavior, you know, among streaming services. So could you even see two different players that try to bundle their services together, even if they're not under the same corporate umbrella? I think that that's the macro thing to take away.
Mm-hmm. All right, time for the second half of the show. Today in other news, how's esports getting on and what's the most interesting new CTV ad format? Story one. Jeremy, you recently wrote that the esports industry's high expectations meet hard economic realities because in a disappointing turn of events for esports, major investors are exiting the sector due to stagnant growth and poor returns, according to the New York Times. You go on to explain that several esports companies like FaZe Clan have suffered sharp declines in stock prices as esports teams lay off employees and part ways with high-profile players. Viewership numbers for esports league are also reportedly in decline. But Jeremy, the current state of the esports space, in your opinion, is what and why?
Murky and slightly depressing. Can I say that?
You can.
You know, part of it is if you're in the esports industry, you don't have a lot of historical data because this is a relatively early and new thing, right? And I don't want to say it's quite looking like a fad versus a trend, but it's a little bit like that because, you know, people watching esports, you know, watching like these amazing gamers and, you know, with tremendous skills, there's a lot of people who are interested in it, and you still see, you know, growth within this space. But ultimately, part of the problem is that there are, you can watch a lot of on-demand, there's on-demand videos like on YouTube if you want to watch gaming. You can watch streamers on Twitch. You can actually play games for yourself. I mean, one of the things that helped esports during the pandemic years in particular was there was supply chain issues and people actually couldn't get video game systems that they were trying to get. So, you know, there are all of these things that are going to be challenges to esports to grow. And I think that you might just have to temper your expectations if you're somebody who expected this business to be a lot bigger than it is right now.
Yeah. You also note, though, on the flip side, that the underlying potential is still there in some respects because younger audiences, because of in-game merchandise, things like that. And we actually estimate that US esports ad revenues will still grow around 10% each of the next few years. 10% isn't triple-digit growth, so your points are well taken in terms of dampening down some of those expectations that we previously had. And to your point about people being able to watch on-demand gaming content, esports viewership, we estimate it's about 30 million people in the country. So not nothing, 30 million, but very flat. However, twice as many Americans watch gaming video content separate to watching gaming competitions. So there are a lot of folks who are just watching, but to your point, on demand and not necessarily a gaming competition. Story two, as Bill Bradley of Adweek notes, NBC Universal announced some additional ad formats at this year's NewFronts. One is Spotlight Plus, a full brand takeover that lets brands own the first impression or prime position across NBCU's One platform. Another ad format is NBCU's AI-powered Must Shop TV that lets viewers buy items they've seen on the screen. But Jeremy, the most interesting new CTV ad format that you've seen so far from any company is what and why?
It all depends how new we're talking, but I actually think that the pause ads on Peacock, which they've had for a while, they're looking to evolve them with a power break format, which is going to have data-informed pause ads and that dynamically customize a brand's message to resonate with different priority audiences. You know, so basically imagine one ad insertion, you know, when you paused your show to go get a snack. But let's say if you know that that snack, let's say you've got eight different versions of that snack, Doritos, let's say, and each one does better with different demographic groups. Well, then you can customize it based off of who's seeing that ad, who's most likely to be based off of the account holder and so on. So that's really interesting. It's also one of those things which was a no-brainer to have these pause ads when you know that people pause to go to the bathroom, get something to eat. Like, you know something about the intent of that user based off of the fact that they pause during a show.
Yeah.
And that alone is just like very noteworthy and a very smart innovation that a lot of other players in the industry are trying to copy right now.
Mm-hmm. In one of your articles, you pointed out that Max service we were talking about earlier is going to be offering brand blocks that let a single advertiser own all ad moments within a piece of programming. So lots of different flavors of CTV ad formats to choose from. I'm sure more to come. That's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you, Jeremy, for hanging out today.
Pleasure as always.
And thanks to Scott, who's editing today's episode for us, James, who copy edits it, and Stuart, who runs the team. And thanks to everyone for listening in. We'll hopefully see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Weekly Listen and eMarketer podcast.